This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Are you struggling to cover the cost of your pet's latest appointment with the vet? Veterinary prices have increased more than 60% over the past decade, according to federal statistics, and some people are relinquishing their pets to animal shelters because they can't afford their care. A recent report in The Atlantic examined the rising cost of veterinary services and found private equity funds are part of the cause. Today, we're going to look at veterinary practices' ownership and pricing structures and discuss some of the options available to help families with pet care. Joining me now are managing editor at the American Economics Liberty Project, Helene Olin. Welcome, Helene.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Ohio Alley Cat Resource Executive Director, Chris Seelbach. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Great to be with you.
And the Pet Fund Executive Director, Karen Leslie. Welcome, Karen. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me as well.
Helene, you investigated rising vet costs. You're also a pet owner yourself. Tell us briefly about your dog, Katie, and what you found out about the cost of veterinary care.
So thank you for asking about Katie. Katie was my late poodle who in the pandemic winter of 2020-2021, at the age of 14, suddenly just began to gasp for breath. And after a number of emergency room visits, a regular vet visit, and then a visit with a veterinary cardiologist, a specialty I did not know existed prior to that moment, she was diagnosed with late stage heart failure. And what I discovered, thank you, is that to keep her going past that diagnosis was going to cost a hell of a lot of money. And we ended up getting another almost 2 years with her, which was wonderful, but it literally was costing thousands upon thousands of dollars. And at a certain point, I got very curious as to what was going on and when and how veterinary care had gotten so expensive. And one of the first things that happened when I began to look at it was that I discovered that the image we all had kind of the vet on the corner, all creatures great and small, you know, the local independent, you know, vet was really increasingly a thing of the past, that private equity had moved in on the veterinary business the way that it had moved in on the human medical business. And that 25% of all veterinary practices and 75% of all specialty practices, and that includes things like cardiology and oncology, were owned by private equity shops or major corporations, I should say.
Yeah. You mentioned that ownership change and the part that plays. I wonder if another reason is a shortage of veterinarians and veterinary technicians. Is that part of these rising costs too, Helene?
It's something of a factor, but it does not explain the entire situation. Because what we know is since private equity money has started pouring into this segment, which was, I mean, it has been going on for some time, but really went on over speed around 2017, 2018. By the pandemic period or a little bit past it, the cost of going to the vet began to run double to triple the rate of annual inflation. So like last month, for example, the CPI for all of us was about 3.3. For veterinary services, it's over 7%. Vets, frankly, are just not getting raises like that. And so something else is clearly going on. And that something else is almost certainly the pressure of private equity, which both demands a higher return and is also needs to pay the debt servicing on to fund this expansion.
Chris, what kind of impact do these increasing costs have on shelters? Do you end up with pets being surrendered because people just can't afford to take care of them?
You know, we see a lot of people who are looking for resources on rehoming or who have found cats or animals that, you know, that they worry need to be a home. You know, we do not see ourselves in direct competition with general practice vet services. Most of our clients, they couldn't afford vet care without what we're able to offer, which is, you know, low cost but high quality spay and neuter services and vaccines and type of care like that. And so, you know, we respect that there are these increases in general care practice, But we also want to make sure that the people that may not even be able to afford general vet care practice have resources like us for care for their animals.
Sure, and I think a lot of people are familiar with the low-cost spay and neuter clinic that Ohio Alley Cat Resource runs. But you mentioned there's also this clinic where you can have vaccines, have routine care for your pet too. What are the kinds of costs that you all have for that, or what you charge for that compared to what a typical veterinary clinic might charge?
So I don't know exactly what a typical veterinary would charge. For a spay neuter surgery for us, it's going to be $60. And if you're doing something called trap neuter return, where you trap a cat that's a community cat that lives out in the open, most of the time, as long as we have grant funding, that would be free of charge. So spay neuter surgery, $60 or maybe free. And then vaccines are going to be $15, flea medicine. Those microchips, $10 to $20. So everything we do is going to be less than $100. And I know that in a general practice, spay neuter surgery alone could be several hundred dollars. So we are an affordable option, and most of the time for our clients, the only option. They don't have the alternative to consider the hundreds of dollars for spay neuter surgery that a regular vet would charge.
And are your fees based on a person's income? Does someone have to income qualify?
No one has to income qualify. It's $60, regardless of your income.
Karen, tell us about the pet fund and how it can help people with veterinary bills.
Right. So thank you for asking about this topic. This has really changed in the past 20 years in terms of, as everyone's talking about, how expensive vet care has become. But there is also another issue that we've spoken about in the press, which is that cancer rates among dogs and cats, which is now most of what we work on, has risen very sharply. When we started 20 years ago, these were 20% or under of our total requests. This year, they're going to be 70%. So that's something that it also has changed in terms of the age where animals are diagnosed. It's not unusual now to get a 1, 2, 3, or 4-year-old animal with cancer. At that point, you're looking at thousands of dollars in treatment. And granted, some of these treatments and a lot of the equipment was not available 20 years ago. There's sort of a giant pie chart about why vet costs have gone up. Certainly, private equity and corporate takeover is a large part of the issue. But there are also these issues in terms of, as you rightly pointed out earlier, lack of available staff post-COVID. And then the issue in terms of the expensive cancer treatment that is now required more and more. So we have an uphill climb in terms of trying to meet that challenge. And really, the only solution that we see, since private equity is not going anywhere, and it will take a generation to replace the vets who retired post-COVID, all of the vet staff who left the industry, our view is that it's going to take an enormous amount of both foundation and corporate support to fund nonprofits to fill in to help pet owners in need.
Let me ask you about the rate of cancer that you talked about, Karen, because 20 years ago, I would imagine a lot of people who had, cats or dogs that they loved didn't even have access to the diagnostic tools that would have been available to figure out if your pet had cancer. I mean, you might have just gotten known, oh, my pet's getting sicker, don't know what to do, and maybe you had to make the difficult choice to euthanize, or there were just no remedies. Is that part of the issue, that there's better diagnostic equipment available and that more people are have access to, MRIs or whatever is out there to help diagnose these things?
That's absolutely true. But also, in working with vets across the country, younger and younger animals are developing cancer. So that's something that we don't have the answer for in terms of why. What we do know is the expense involved and how hard it is to fund that. And the challenge to all animal-related nonprofits now is that we have to make up that difference. and try to be a very effective drop in the bucket in terms of helping pet owners with these enormous costs. And that support is critical in order to be able to do that.
We're talking about the rising cost of veterinary care. Have you struggled with your pet's vet bills? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Chris, how big a need is there for this kind of support? I mean, what do you all see at Ohio Alley Cat Resource in terms of the number of people who count on these, this, you know, lower cost veterinary care? What's the need out there?
The need is great. I mean, when you go to schedule a spay neuter surgery, we're scheduling for early fall already. So there's a lot of demand. And I think you mentioned that there is a vet shortage and a tech shortage. So, you know, we have a difficult time finding vets to meet the demand. So there's a lot of people who are looking for this low cost, high quality service. And it is hard to keep up with that demand. So you know, we do our best to make sure that if someone has a cat that needs a spay neuter surgery or the vaccines or a microchip, that we're able to provide that in a timely manner, but it's not always easy.
Yeah. Helene, I want to come back to your reporting on these private equity funds and their ownership. I know you reached out to these private equity funds that own so many clinics and that you found are an important part of why these prices have increased. What kind of response did they give you?
Some didn't respond at all. Others, you know, defended the practices and said that, you know, they were making, when they purchased practices, they were upgrading the facilities and bringing in more sophisticated treatments, which in some cases is true. But then that comes to a related problem, which is, which you hear about from a lot of pet owners, which is upselling of treatments. So say, you know, your dog is throwing up, right? And instead of the vet saying, yeah, let's just watch this for a few days, all of a sudden they're ordering or, you know, buckets of blood tests and sonograms and asking to keep the pet overnight for observation. And the next thing you know is you have a few $1,000 bill. What is going on with private equity and corporate ownership in the veterinary business is that they know that our love for our pets is immense, and that they are there to kind of, you know, help us treat the, you know, get them better treatment. But at the same time, they are also going to charge a lot of money for that. And they can do that because there isn't any real way to push back. You can say no to a recommended test, but what there isn't is, in human medical care, there's Medicare, there's insurers, there's people pushing back against high prices. Nobody in the animal medical space has that kind of power to push back. And that's a real problem.
Yeah. We reached out to three private equity funds to invite them to be part of this conversation. Only one responded and declined the invitation to be on the program, but did send us a statement. This is from VCA Animal Hospitals. The statement reads, in part, our veterinary teams review treatment options and estimated costs with clients before deciding together on a treatment plan that is individualized based on each pet's unique needs. We work to ensure our clients have access to the information they need regarding treatment options and associated costs to make informed decisions about their pet's care. The full statement is available on our website, wvxu.org. We have a lot more to talk about with this. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, could hospital price transparency bring patient costs down? This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about the rising cost of veterinary care and some of the help that's available to reduce the financial burden. My guests are managing editor at the American Economics Liberties Project, Helene Olin, Ohio Alley Cat Resources Executive Director Chris Seelbach, and the Pet Fund Executive Director Karen Leslie. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a listener on the line. Hi, Lynn. Thanks so much for calling.
Well, thanks for having me on, and thanks for your panel for doing some great work for our pets. And my question is around the private equity and the issues that private equity have when they buy out a lot of local practices that basically, you know, monopolize the market? Is there something that the government can do to step in to prevent private equity from being sort of monopolistic in the market?
Great question. Helene, what have you learned in that regard in terms of your reporting? Has the federal government taken action to try to rein in costs? What can the federal government do?
Yes, the Federal Trade Commission has weighed in a couple of times, most recently in 2022, when they ordered JAB, which is a private equity group, to get approval for future purchases of specialty clinics in Texas and California if they're within 25 miles of another one they own. They did this because they feared the buildup of a stealth monopoly. At the same time, Lina Khan last year, the head of the Federal Trade Commission, spoke to an AVMA conference and said vets should reach out to her with their concerns about this particular issue. So the Federal Trade Commission could certainly go in there again. Something similar is occurring in Great Britain right now. Their equivalent of the Federal Trade Commission has recently opened up an investigation into veterinary prices precisely because of this issue. In Britain, about 60% of veterinary clinics are now owned by corporate ownership or private equity, and they've had a similar skyrocketing price problem. And when they put out the initial inquiry, they were overwhelmed with public response. It apparently was over 56,000 letters, which was one of their most highest response rates ever. And they recently opened an investigation over there.
Hmm. Wow. Thanks for that terrific question, Lynn. And thanks for listening. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to make a few quick points and say that my dogs have gone to VCA Madeira Animal Hospital, and we've always found that the clinicians there are very cost-conscious and sort of operating with integrity in caring for our dogs and not sort of upselling. But I think that the reporter makes a really good case about the overall trends with private equity that's basically acting like vulture capitalisms in all sorts of industries, including medical care for humans and animals. And I think it just kind of boils down to individuals. And I think we need to sort of look at the systemic solutions, but my husband works in human medical care, and the insurance companies are certainly taking advantage of the doctors when they're sort of like pushing down prices for customers, but then also keeping the profits and the savings. And my final comment is that my dog last year got a rare, not so rare, brain swelling disease that caused blindness. And we took her to MedVet Cincinnati, and I'm grateful that they were available for all of the diagnostic tests. And we spent $35,000 in like a span of 6 months. And with all of the medical diagnostics and treatments, you know, she still died just short of her fourth birthday. So we're operating in, you know, a medical system that has no guarantees for humans or animals, and there are even less sort of research going into medical care for dogs and animals. Sorry that this took so long, but thank you.
No, thank you, Kath, and I'm so sorry about your dog. That's got to be heartbreaking. I know how much we all love our pets. Helene, what about pet insurance? How do people know if that's a good idea and a good value?
Pet insurance is what's generally thought of as something of a troubled product. In theory, it should be the solve, but in fact, it's not like human insurance. There's no, you can still exclude for pre-existing conditions. The coverage can often be spotty. The deductibles can be high, and they don't need to renew you. So recently, Nationwide, which offers pet insurance, announced they'd be cutting off about 100,000 of their clients, that is your pets, because with the inflation in the space, and this is their explanation, they simply could not make enough of a profit offering this product. So it's really, it doesn't really solve the basic problem, which is why are the costs so high and how can we afford them? Because ultimately you're just going to pay more and more in insurance if you can get it. And as I said, again, the insurance coverage is spotty and the costs can go up quite significantly over time.
Chris, I know you're a cat lover, as I am. Do you ever worry that only people with a whole lot of money will be able to have the experience of having a beloved pet for years and years, especially if there's some, you know, critical condition that comes up?
I do. I mean, you know, your caller said she spent $35,000 on her dog, which that's amazing that she's able to do that. But I think that's a very rare exception for people. And people of all income levels should be able to have the luxury of having a pet. And so, yes, I think it's a very concerning that the costs continue to go up and the services don't seem to be meeting the levels of people who are lower income. Thankfully, we do have these organizations like Ohio Alley Cat Resource Spay and Neuter Clinic and Pets in Need and UCAN and other organizations. But, you know, we are not run through private equity. We're private shelters, private organizations, nonprofits that only exist through, you know, people donating money and grants. So for those who are concerned or who want to help to make sure that the options are available for people of lower means, then we need your support. But yes, it's very concerning that, you know, there's a trend that makes it seem like only people with wealth are able to have pets.
Karen, you mentioned that your organization, the Pet Fund, is getting a lot more requests from people whose pets have been diagnosed with cancer at much younger ages. How do these advances in care and the costs of the treatment that come with those, how has that contributed to the complexity of this issue, just the costs of pet ownership and what people want to be able to do and can do?
So everything that everyone's talking about is absolutely correct in terms of, you know, the driving up of prices by private equity and corporate interests, and in terms of just the after effects of COVID, everyone, you know, needing care and having their own economic challenges. And of course, the rates of cancer, which means that basically pet owners are facing expensive treatment that 20 years ago, they might not have had to encounter until their pet was older. So all of those things are happening, and they're all happening at once. So that makes it very challenging for pet owners to be able to deal with their one-year-old dog having cancer and the expenses involved. It's absolutely true that given, you know, the corporate interests that are affecting this industry, that nonprofits are really having to work very hard and very creatively to find support for the increased need. So all of those things do drive increased need, and they require increased support. So I completely agree with that.
Well, I've been talking with Managing Editor at the American Economics Liberty Project, Helene Olin, Ohio Alley Cat Resource Executive Director, Chris Seelbach, and the Pet Fund Executive Director, Karen Leslie. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Up next, could hospital price transparency bring down patients' costs? This is Cincinnati Edition.